Welcome to another episode of the Golders Podcast. If you haven't already, click subscribe and look out for new episodes releasing every other Friday. We hope everybody enjoyed our last episode with Adam Temple. Before we introduce today's podcast, we want to mention our partnership with clothing company Capo. The meaning behind the brand runs much deeper. The Northwest of England clothing brand strive to provide premium aesthetic fitting and quality clothing at affordable prices. Why don't you check out the products at www.capouk.com and on Instagram at capouk. Now for today's podcast, here is a short snippet of what to expect.
Building relationships is not about transactions, it's about connection and building connection with people. And I love to interact with the people in our environment where I am now. I think everywhere I've been, I've always enjoyed that side of it. I've always enjoyed building connections with people and having a relationship. And I've worked across the spectrum in a short period. So from our under 23 group, where it was about winning, and winning was an integral part of what we did, while still being able to have some banter with that group, to working with the under 15s, where you're playing a big part in a child's development and helping them grow.
Today's podcast offers a unique perspective as we delve into the life of my co-host, David, who is not only my son, but also my best friend. While I may offer a biased view, David is undoubtedly a bright, caring, and talented young soccer coach. His sharp intelligence and genuine passion for learning shine through in everything he does. Throughout this episode, David will share insight from his footballing journey and provide a glimpse into his life as an academy manager. We hope you enjoy. Today's podcast breaks from our normal format, and I'm thrilled to announce that my co-host, David, will be joining me as a guest, and will be sharing his coaching insights and life experiences. Now, as you well know, Golders is sprinkling particles of knowledge to help people. What does Golders mean to you, David?
Really, it's along the same lines. So Golders is about helping people. I think if you peel back the layers and look at what that means, I would go by a quote: seek first to understand others, then to be understood. And what I mean by that is, in order to help someone and move them on their journey, would be understanding where they're at and what their perspective is.
So give us a brief overview of your footballing journey up to now.
So I'm an ex-player. I grew up in the academy system back in England. I played in England, played in Spain, played in America, and was never really able to stay fit at any point during my career. And at 25, after another surgery, I called it a day, and I've never played since. And fortunately, at that point, even though I'd been through a lot of injuries and whatnot, I was already coaching. During my playing career, I'd actually completed my UEFA B before I actually finished playing. But once I was done, I started putting more of an emphasis on coaching and really started to pursue it more. But I will say, it was never something that I actually truly envisioned at the time that I would do as a career, because I had a strong interest in building a business and being in control of my own destiny financially. I was doing stuff at Man City with their international academy. This was a good few years ago now, and got offered an opportunity to move back to America, which I obviously took. And since being back over here, I've held quite a few roles. I've been a head of phase, head of coaching, assistant academy director, under 20 head coach of a USL academy, under 23 coach, and now academy director at a USL academy.
What has your experiences in working at, you mentioned working at Man City, at their international soccer schools, and then, but when you were playing, you went over to Spain and playing at the, well, it's no longer now, but the Glen Oddle Academy. And what have those experiences, or how have those experiences helped to shape you?
I think your past experiences shape pretty much everything, if not everything you do, whether it's a direct experience where you've felt a certain way about something, or indirectly where you've seen the way others have treated people or have been treated. So from a playing standpoint, I learned a lot when I was playing about the way I would want to treat people. And I remember the coaches that made me feel good as a player. So as an under 10 at Blackburn Rovers Academy, there was a coach that was exceptional with the group, a guy called Andy Sasamovich. And he really, in terms of the environment and the players, made people feel good because of the way that he interacted with them. And then, like you said, that being in Spain, playing under Glenn Hoddle and Graham Ricks and a few others that were there as well, they were very similar. They were very warm and welcoming, and they were normal people. You could have a conversation with them, and I took a lot from that. And then at the same time, I also remember the coaches who didn't do that as well. And I will say it's not about being fluffy and just rainbows and butterflies, but it is about making people feel valued in some form or other in the environment. And you have the old saying, treat people the way you would like to be treated, but I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think you treat people the way they want to be treated while sticking to your values and beliefs. So to do that, you draw from your experiences, and then you go off instinct and intuition in those specific situations.
Coaching, and you mentioned about doing some business stuff as well, which I'm very familiar with and very much aware of, but was football coaching, was it something that was ingrained in you right from the get-go, from a young boy? And what was it that initially sparked your interest and then, of course, led you to pursue it as a career?
Up until moving to the US, it wasn't something that I was sure that I would do as a career. It was always something I had an interest in. And obviously, for growing up, I would spend a lot of time around yourself and other people that were coaching, and I enjoyed it. But like you said, I had an interest in business, and right up until moving over here, I was still balancing a successful business while coaching full time, and that was challenging. I think the more I saw how many lives I was able to influence or could influence, the more I became fixated with coaching. And I knew I had an ability to positively impact people. And even though I knew I still had a lot to learn and still do have a lot to learn, I felt like I was relatively good at what I was doing, but I had a passion for learning and improving. And really, at that point, the transition into focusing solely on coaching happened.
So what is it that excites you the most about coaching? Because you've watched and observed many now. There's still lots that you can still learn, as you've already indicated, and that'll continue. But helping people, knowing you as I know you, you're very caring around people. There's an element around, there's a term used around emotional intelligence, where attuned to what's needed in the moment and then adapting the situation to meet their needs. And equally, you'll get something back from it. But what is it? Is it the feeling of helping those to help others to become better? Or does it provide a feeling for you where you're getting an element of satisfaction in knowing that it is both helping you and in helping them?
There are certainly differences with every age group you work with. So I've, as I alluded to, I've worked with pretty much every age group at this point. But the thing that is unanimous, regardless of the age, is the ability to build relationships with people. And building relationships is not about transactions, it's about connection and building connection with people. And I love to interact with the people in our environment where I am now. I think everywhere I've been, I've always enjoyed that side of it. I've always enjoyed building connections with people and having a relationship. And I've worked across the spectrum in a short period. So from our under 23 group, where it was about winning, and winning was an integral part of what we did, while still being able to have some banter with that group, to working with the under 15s, where you're playing a big part in a child's development and helping them grow. But again, like I said, the big thing that for me is just the ability to build relationships with people.
Where do you get your coaching fix? How does it come, and what guises does it present itself?
Quite a lot of different places. I think being over here, I have to obviously utilize my phone and utilize technology in terms of having access to lots of very good people. But every time I am back in England, I want to make the most of that too. So this past Christmas, as it was the Christmas before, I spent a lot of time in at Liverpool with the 21s around Barry Lewis, who is exceptionally good at what he does. And I speak to Barry quite regularly and pick his brains and have conversations with him. So having people like that, people like Harry Watling, who was previously at Rangers and QPR and prior to that was over here as a head coach in the USL Championship. And with someone like Harry, I would speak to him over the phone or on Zoom and just bat ideas around. So from a footballing standpoint, having access to exceptional people is important. I think as well as that, so this past Christmas while I was at home, we went into Wigan Warriors with Matt Peat, who's recently been on the podcast too, and seeing how he operates in his environment. So when you look at how they do things, successful people do things, it leaves clues. Success leaves clues. So you see what Matt does and what he's done to be successful, and you get little snippets from it. And even as recently as the other week, I was down in Las Vegas with around the Sydney Roosters with Justin Holbrook, who obviously part of the book, a friend of ours, also been on the podcast. And just being able to see how these people operate in high-performing environments. And even though in some of these instances they're in different sports, I think, as mentioned, the one thing for me that when you look at how these high-performing environments work, it does leave clues. And what I want to do is I want to spend as much time around these people or interacting with these people as possible, learn from it, and then bring it into my environment that I've got here with my own authentic twist to what fits for us. So I love learning and I love spending time around people like that. There's not a whole lot that gets me going as much as spending time with people in high performing places.
I completely agree with that. Having spent many years looking, searching and reigniting interest in things that I don't think if it's a game of football, which is what we're talking about here, and it's about two teams, two goals, different colours playing against each other, it's the methodology, but it's actually keeping abreast of what's current. And I think that'll continue, and I implore that, you know, to be a mainstay in your development. Now, you mentioned earlier you're an academy manager at your club. What is it about that excites you? And tell us a little bit about your role.
Yeah, I think going back to the answer previously, a bit that excites me is being able to build something and build relationships with people. So with the groups that we've got in, being able to interact with all those kids and see them develop on the journey while also being able to do it with staff too and playing a part in their development as well. I think the good part about it is if you get good people around you, you can learn from them too. So the role itself really is my job is to get players from the academy into our first team in Chattanooga. I'm fully aware that of all the kids that we have in the environment, there's few that will ever make it as a professional footballer. So we have to ensure that we're gearing these boys up for something else as well. So I think the one thing about the American system that I do like is that you can use a ball to get an education. So for the ones that don't play professionally, we want to see if we can get them all opportunities to play in college and get them scholarships. And along with that, I think from a life standpoint is just teaching them life lessons and ensuring that we have high standards and that we're steering them on their path when they're done with us in a few years.
Now, the word success is a relative word. It's massive meanings dependent upon the individual. But what current successes have you had with the academy that link with the first team?
So the academy itself has only been going for 2 years now. We've had three boys sign with the first team in those 2 years, which from our standpoint, we think is a pretty good success. And then other than that, we've had every single graduating player has been offered opportunities in college in some form or other to play. So I think from a success standpoint right now, as we stand, we've done quite well. I think we've met the goals that we set out and probably exceeded as well. But I think the goal now is just to maintain that and to keep pushing forward and improving on what we're doing to help the people in the environment.
So what makes who you work for, the club, what makes them more unique than any other in Utah?
I think the biggest difference, other than obviously Real Salt Lake, who the MLS club is, we have a first team, so we have a direct pathway to a pro club. And with that being the case, there is a goal or an outcome at the end of it. So I think everyone that has something set up here, it serves a purpose. Just depends what that purpose is. For us, our purpose, like I've said, is we wanna find and develop elite talent in Utah. And for us to send players to the first team, we do have to find the best players. We have to get those best the players in and work with them for however long they're with us and then obviously move them on to whatever's next. But yeah, from our standpoint, I think the fact that we've got a first team enables us to do things that most others can't.
Doing the role that you do, how do you strike an healthy balance between being supportive and demanding of the players you coach? And equally, the same with your coaching staff.
I think the first part of it is just laying the standards and expectations out from day one. So if people then know what to expect, you can then go off that. I think if you don't lay out the expectations and your standards and what you want in the environment, it's very hard to then come back and say to somebody, hey, you're not doing what I've expected. So with people that are in the environment, I also understand it's hard to live at 100% every day, but I think if there's an awareness of what we want, you have something to go off.
So anyone out there who lives in and around Salt Lake, if they were interested in coming to the academy and share some insights into your coaching methods and how do you implement them within your academy?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of me personally, and then implementing that in the club as well is I think the first part of it is you coach the person, then you coach the player, then you coach the team. So you work with the person before you work with the player. And I go back to the bit about the gold dust at the start is understanding others and understanding their perspective and then helping steer them on the journey from there. on top of that, I think from a playing standpoint, I talk about with our boys about knowing your strengths. So knowing your strengths as a person and what you're good at. As a player, what do you do well? What are your super strengths and how can you impact a game positively with the strengths that you have? And then we talk about the team and fitting the individual into that is how does your strengths or how the things that you do well, how do they align to the role within the team? So if you're a centre back, what are the minimum requirements for you to be efficient in that position? And how can you help the team perform? So knowing your role and then being able to fulfill your role and just having a clear understanding of the qualities that you need to fit that role. Now, our job as the coach is to provide that information if needed. So in terms of knowing the role and fulfilling the role, if they don't know, we've got to help them. So I had a conversation recently with a player actually who he's a fullback, pretty new. He's not been in for too long. And I asked him, what are you good at? So he came back with some answers. And from there, I asked the next part of the question of what qualities do you need to have as a fullback? And then started asking a few more questions from there. We then got to a point where I was asking him what qualities he needed to have when defending. And he said just about everything, but what I believe to be the number one quality as a fullback, which is to be the best 1v1 defender on the field in wide areas. And prior to this, the kid was saying everything from communicate, step up, be able to know what's around me, but really missed that key detail of, look, for you to be a fullback and to continue to play and pursue a career in the game, if you're going to play there, you have to be the best 1v1 defender in certain parts of the field. Obviously, from there, we've got to work with him. We do a lot of position-specific stuff. But for this kid, he didn't know that. And if he continued down the path, how would he know what areas he needed to focus on to keep on growing in that position?
I think the standards are not as good as what they used to be across, and I generalise, of course, there's some very good people out there doing tremendous work. I don't see a lot of that nowadays. There's not a lot of coaches that I get inspired by. I digress somewhat. So when you're coaching, what are your non-negotiables? What are you not prepared to accept?
So there's four non-negotiables that I have in the environment. Quote that we use consistently is the standard you set or the standard you get, which came from Craig Brown, who was a good friend of ours. Those non-negotiables. So the first one is high standards. So what is high standards? Look, you come into an environment when you arrive and then when you leave, you make sure it's just as clean, if not cleaner, when you're departing. High standards are also things like if we're traveling and we're away and you're in the hotel, that if you're talking to one of the staff members in the hotel, you use manners as please and thank yous. You make sure that you're cleaning up after yourself. From a footballing standpoint, in terms of high standards, you always hold yourself to a level. And look, you're going to dip below it, but I think having awareness of what that level is then enables you to have an awareness. I think that the second non-negotiable is intent. So having a purpose and everything that you do is with intent. So if you're going to pass it, you pass it with purpose. If you're going to do the warm-up, you do the warm-up with purpose. The next one is commitment. So being committed to what it is you're doing. So if you're going to come in, you commit to it. And then the fourth one is energy. The energy standpoint really, I think, starts from the staff and starts from the people that run the environment. If people come in and they see me as flat as a pancake and with zero energy, the likelihood is that they're going to just replicate what I'm giving. So I talk to our coaches about being energetic and about being ready to get going, about giving off good energy so that when the players arrive, they feed off that too. So the energy part is a big one. We want We want sessions that are bouncing. We want sessions where people want to be there, where they enjoy the environment, because it is very positive in terms of the energy that's being given off.
So out of that list, which, if you had to put them in an order or a syntax, which would come first?
I don't necessarily think there is an order with it. I think they go hand in hand, because I think from where we're at, one without the other doesn't operate like we would want it to, because if we have the high standards, which is, say, that that's highest importance, but if you have the high standards but there's no energy, then we're not getting the best out of the players anyway. If we have high standards but there's no intent, or we have high standards but people aren't committed, then I don't think you're getting the result that you want. So I think in terms of where they're at, I think they all go hand in hand.
So when you come in, you'll come into contact with lots of players, lots of parents, different staff, opposition coaches. But how do you maintain open communication with them to ensure transparency and alignment of your standards, your goals, and what you're intending to do in terms of the outcome are actually being met?
I'm very accessible to parents and players. I go back to a previous answer. I set the standards and expectations early. I let people know what they are. And then if somebody dips below them and then there's a problem, I can refer back to it. But I found that parents want the honesty most of the time. I think there's obviously some in some cases where they don't buy into that. But when parents have questions, I'm more than happy to answer the questions. And even though it may not be the specific answer that they're looking for, I think if you're able to give them a reason why and a justification behind what you're saying and what you're doing, it goes a long way. So from a standpoint of when they come to me, I'm more than happy to interact with them. And I'm more than happy to spend time having conversations, because they're asking for a reason. And the child, in this case, the boy, is the most important thing in their life. So they have a vested interest and they want to know what they can do and what we can do to help him as much as possible. And our goal, obviously, is to do that. But I think at times parents have blinkers on and they only see what they see. And a lot of that is based around their child and probably have a biased view. And sometimes my job is to help take those blinkers off for them and give them probably more of a realistic expectation based on what's taking place and based off what we're seeing and doing, because we're with them every day. And I think if you do that, and like I said, you're able to give them reasons why, I don't think you can go far wrong.
I think it'd be a fair assumption that because of your playing experience, being at a D1 college and a very good one, and if you want to share some of their experience, what standard it was like, when parents are actually have this dichotomy of, well, I guess they don't have the dichotomy, they're very clear about where they think the sons are. But because of standards, and I'm referring to playing standards and this expectation, this word expectation of where they believe the son can be, but the parents never played the game. Or some of them may have played to a varying standard, and some of it pretty good, some of it pretty bad. But you then got to deal with the balance of, or fill in a gap of their expectation, what you know about the game, and then this piece that can help them improve. That must be quite challenging at times to be able to communicate that, particularly to someone who's not experienced that. That must be quite challenging to deal with it for you at certain periods.
Especially where we are, I think you only know what you know. So if you've only been exposed to one thing, you're not going to know what's outside of it. And I've had several experiences where parents will come and ask a question or give an observation, but the observation is just based on their experience. And their experience might be really limited in that's only that seeing players within Utah. Well, they can't take from an experience outside of that of what players look like in the rest of the US or what players look like in Europe, because they've never seen it. But in their mind, because their son is doing very well in an environment, that then that expands into, well, he should be playing at this level or at that level. And for me, my job in those moments is to probably give some honest feedback, but not in those moments. It wouldn't be direct. It would more so be based on my experiences. So I'll give you an example. I had parents that were asking about the son playing in Europe and what it looked like to get the son to play in Europe. And the reality is, in that moment, I had to then give experiences based off what I've seen and what I've done. So if you're a centre back and you're 5'9", and that is as tall as you're going to be, you're 5'9", and you're in Utah and you do very well in Utah, but you do well in Utah because of the standard that you're also playing against, because a big part of what you do is your competition, because at some point everybody finds their level. Well, you're doing well here. And because you're doing well here, you think that all of a sudden you can then go and play in England. If you go over to England and you have a look at what a lot of the top clubs do, the centre-backs are 6'3", 6'4", at 16, 17 years old. And in that moment, you're not going to fit in, and nor will they have any interest in having a look at you either. So having those conversations based off what my experiences are, and just putting some realism around it for the parents and the players, just so that they have an understanding, is important. I have them pretty regularly, to be honest, because you do have it where players have probably false readings or false expectations. But I think more than anything, the parents have that, because they look at the son and have a biased opinion, and they see that he might have a good game, or he's had a good few games, and then believe that he's probably ahead of where he may be in that moment. And when we have that, the other part of it that I talk about is just consistency. So I think it's really easy to perform well once. I think it's really easy to come in and have a good game. But I think the challenge is, can you consistently deliver at that level? So if you can consistently be an 8 out of 10, for example, every session and every game, then there may be another step for you. But if you can't consistently deliver at a point, again, there has to be different conversations then.
So what advice would you give? I guess it's a two-pronged question, really. What advice would you give to parents in regards to where the son is and their expectations? Because, of course, in the States, if you're a playing model out there, if you're reasonably decent, you're likely to save quite a bit of money if the son gets a bit of a scholarship. In Europe, slightly different. And then what advice would you give to players who have also got these false aspirations? I know you've mentioned earlier, you'll speak to them and building this relationship. But even that, you know, they've got to go on their own journey, experience certain things. So how would you steer someone towards having a reality check?
I do talk about it being a marathon and not a sprint when parents come in and have those conversations, or players. I think people are in a rush consistently. I think people are in a rush. I think they look to get somewhere very, very quickly and to achieve things as quickly as possible. And I talk again, marathon, not a sprint, but you're running your own race. So you can look at other people and at what they're doing and think that you have to be where they are now, or you should be ahead of where they are now. But that's, you're running a completely different race than somebody else. So you run the marathon, and marathons are hard and they take a long time. And in terms of from a football and soccer standpoint, the marathon doesn't really ever finish until you hang your boots up. So it's a constant race, and it's a difficult race. In terms of from a parent standpoint, like you said, that some of them are chasing something for the kids. So they're doing it for financial reasons or because they want to see the child sign a pro contract. I think just giving them facts and figures around that is important. Well, your son wants to be a pro, that's great, but did you know X amount of players play pro? The rest of them do not. And the reason they don't there's a few reasons behind it. So one of them may be that they're just not good enough. But another one might be that there's been expectations and pressure on them that just hasn't allowed them to perform at a level that they probably may have been possible of. And sometimes you've just got to back off and leave them alone. And over here, and the system's different, and it's changing now with having homegrown players. So the boys that signed for our first team are obviously a lot younger, but the average age for first-year pros in America was 22 to 23 years old. Well, if I've got a 15-year-old, a 16-year-old knocking on my door saying, I want to sign a pro right now, I can go back to them and say, look, the average age for a pro in America is this age. And the reason was because of the college system. And I think giving people facts and figures around that kind of stuff, while also just letting it be known, you've got to leave them alone. Let them run the race. And it's a long race, and it's not a, well, I've got to get there right now. Allow them to go through the journey.
Yeah, that their age thing, you know, where you're referring to, we've got players in around first teams here at 16 years of age, but the difference is they've been involved, they're around and surrounded by other people who've got a wealth of experiences in around the pro game. So what is it that drives you to want to succeed? I know when you come home, it's highly competitive in the house. When it's coming around Christmas time, the games come out. Where's that come from? Is that your mum? She's a former Lioness. Your sister is extremely competitive and represented a country as well. So where's that come from?
I think the competitive side of it definitely comes from home and the environment that you get brought up in. But I think for me, and what drives me, is just being able to have a purpose. So whatever that purpose is, that's something that drives me to want to succeed. So I get, you know, if you achieve something and you've done a good job, I'll be happy that something's gone well. But I'm never satisfied with that, because there's always something else. I think if you just stop and stand still, it's game over. So I don't tend to get satisfied by things. I'll be happy with them, and then it's, look, what's next? We've got to get moving, and we've got to get on to the next thing now. But I think having a purpose, and obviously where I am right now, the purpose is, as we've spoke about, is in terms of the players, is helping them progress every day and helping move them on to whatever the next step is in their journey. But even for me individually, my purpose is to be the best I can be, the best coach that I can be, the best academy director that I can possibly be. And I might do something well and I'll be happy about it, but I'm not satisfied, because it doesn't stop there, because things keep evolving, things keep changing. I've got to keep doing things and continue to do things that help not only myself move forward, but also the people around me.
You mentioned earlier you've been around some exceptionally talented people. And having that in your life provides information. It's then how you adapt that information of what you've observed, and then you adapt it to meet whatever needs they're in front of you. And having that adaptability in your coaching is a huge benefit for the players, because you can't work with an under 9 or under 10 or under 13 or 14 as you can with an under 20 or under 19. So what is the best, in your opinion, the best coaching advice you've received so far that's helped to benefit you?
Yeah, the best coaching advice is just to be the best learner. So whatever you do, wherever you go, I think being the best learner will put you in the best possible position to continue to grow and improve and help those around you. That's something that I've heard quite a lot. I think that the one time it really, really hit home was this past Christmas when we went in to Wigan Warriors. And obviously I asked Matt Pete the question about, look, you've had success. You've had a lot of success in your first 2 years. How and what are you going to do to continue to get success, to continue to move forward? What will success look like this season? And he literally just came back and said, I got to be the best learner. Out of every coach in the league, I have to be the best learner. And then just alluded to how things change and how you have to be able to learn and adjust and adapt consistently. So it's not how you start, but it's how you continue to adjust and adapt that will help you be as successful and success obviously relative, but as successful as you can in whatever it is you're doing. So best coaching advice, absolutely be the best learner.
And great advice. So if anyone out there wanted to contact you, how can they do so?
Yeah, I'm pretty accessible on social medias. And obviously, if people reach out or want to reach out, always happy to have conversations. But yeah, Twitter, DJ Mayer 3, and LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. I'm on all of them. I don't really use them a whole lot, but I am on them to be contacted. I am accessible on them.
Final question. What is one thing that you believe you need to improve to be the best that you can be?
Be a better listener. Being a better listener, obviously, it goes along with learning, but probably listening with more intent at times. And then, even though I know you've asked for one, I think the other one is just getting more comfortable with difficult conversations.
As mentioned at the beginning, this podcast has been slightly different to the ones we've done previously. But having you share some of your coaching insights and life experiences will help those who are less familiar with who you are. On behalf of myself and the listeners, thanks ever so much and good luck in your future.
Thanks for tuning into the Golders podcast today. If you enjoyed this episode and you haven't already subscribed, please do so. Your continued support is highly appreciated, and it means so much to us knowing that the content that's being produced is providing value in people's lives. If you would like to know more or get more information from us, you can follow us on Twitter at Gold Dust Podcast, and also you can visit our website at thegolddustcoach.com. Thank you, everybody.